Hi, this is Jerry Pippin, and welcome to the UFO Files. On the line from Denver, Colorado, where they're getting ready for the 36th Annual International UFO Symposium, entitled UFOs. No, not unidentified flying objects. They're referring to them this time as unconventional flying objects, the body of technological evidence, part two. We have the director of MUFON, the international chapter, and of course he's the well-known man in ufology for everyone, been in it for a while, John Schuessler. Welcome to the show, John. Well, John, I notice where you're going to be having the MUFON symposium this year, the national conference, and you're going to be back in Denver again next year too, huh?
Yes, it is. We've had pretty good luck with it here in Denver because it's a central location. And once you get it set up, it's pretty easy to do it another time and another time. So we're going to go for it again next year at the same location, which is the Marriott Tech Center Hotel. A very, very nice place to have it, where most of the space-type meetings are held out here in Colorado.
Yeah, this one this year is the 36th annual.
It sure is.
You've been doing it that long. I know. You've been at least active for at least 30 years.
Well, I've been active. I was one of the founders of MUFON.
Okay, I knew that.
I've been around since it was founded in '69, and actually I started with APRO back in '65.
Now, let's get into a little bit about your background here in a moment. But first of all, you have some pretty interesting people there. I just visited with Stanton Friedman over the weekend in Roswell, and we had an interesting interview, and he says he's going to talk about government secrets.
Well, what he calls them is government lies.
Yeah, right. I was trying to be a little nicer about it. No, that's true. And he said he didn't know that he'd have enough time to cover all of them.
No one could cover them all, unfortunately, but I think he'll get his point across pretty well.
And the sixth man to walk on the moon was Edgar Mitchell. Dr. Edgar Mitchell will be there, right?
Yes, Edgar will be there. He's really a super guy, a personal friend of mine, and he graciously said that he would come to our symposium this year and give a talk. And I wanted to do it for several reasons. One, because he is a man that's dared to step out of the norm a little bit as an astronaut and do things with ESP and the Institute of Noetic Sciences and with the National Institute of Discovery Science on UFOs and things like that. And secondarily, he is a national treasure, the sixth man to walk on the moon. You don't meet those very often. And I wanted the people at Denver to get a chance to meet him and see, you know, he's a real guy, smart guy that knows what he's talking about, and he can dispel some of the rumors like, well, we didn't go to the moon, it was all done in a Hollywood studio, which is ridiculous. You know, we did go. And so Edgar will be talking about that.
Friday, July 22nd, and it runs through Sunday, July 24th, there in Denver, as you said, at the Marriott Tech Center. And that's an interesting hotel complex in itself.
Yes, it is. Its name tells what it is. It's in the middle of the technical environment of Denver. The National Space Society holds their meetings there. Even the Star Trek groups hold their meetings there. It's a kind of a setting which is like a campus with trees and everything that's very beautiful. But it's also, I guess you call it a five-star hotel, which has all the amenities. And our people are going to get a real break on cost by going there. They'll never get in a hotel like that again for the price we're getting them there for, $65 a night. They've treated us real well, and that's one reason we're going back next year.
Yeah, and we have a link there for information to your website and the conference information, so anyone interested can go over there and read that. I noticed where Scott Ramsey's going to be there, who's kind of an expert on Aztec. We interviewed him a little earlier this year about Aztec, and he seems to know everything about that, so you're covering all kinds.
One person that didn't take the rumors about about Aztec being a fake thing, he actually went out and interviewed, you know, people in 29 states that were firsthand witnesses. He didn't take some rumored thing out of a book somewhere, and this is what we think it's all about, is people doing firsthand research and investigation. And when you do that, there's no doubt in your mind about this stuff is real.
Now, you know, we'll get to more people in the lineup here in a moment, but you mentioned MUFON and investigations, and how has that progressed over the years? I mean, you founded the thing.
Well, we started out as, you know, the Midwest UFO Network, a little grouping of roughly seven states surrounding Illinois, where Walt Anderson and I both lived. And that was because we had been that section's representatives for APRO, and then APRO decided that they wanted to pull the management all back into Tucson and not have any representatives in the field anymore. And we said, you know, the people here need more than that. So we formed MUFON, and within a year, people outside of that area were clamoring to participate. So we changed the name from Midwest to Mutual so we could keep the same acronym, MUFON. And we've had that since 1969.
You have investigators probably in every state, I would assume.
We have in every state and in other countries of the world. We have representatives in most other countries as well. And the investigators, you know, these people are all volunteers. They're just wonderful people that are willing to study, to learn the investigative techniques, so they're all doing it in the same way, and study our manual. They take a test. And then they go out and do this work, and they spend their own dollars to do it. So they're very dedicated people, and we really applaud the investigators that do this kind of work. We have about 450 trained investigators now, and we've got another 831 or so in training at the present time. So that's a pretty formidable force of people looking into this mystery.
Sounds to me like maybe you're planning on growing quite a lot there, if you got that many people in training.
Well, we would like to grow a lot. You know, you can't cover everything. The sightings just continue to mirages, you know. People say, well, there are no UFO sightings. It's only because they don't know. There's always at least 300 sightings a month.
We talk about that on our website and also on our radio shows regularly. When I first started doing UFO shows many decades ago, I figured, well, it'll be, you know, just dealing with some of these things in 52 and 47, etc. Boy, was I surprised.
You never know what hour of the day another one's coming in. I took a little break on my birthday back in May. I thought I was going to take the day off. It turned out there were 5 sightings that day and evening. And besides that, then I ended up on a radio program as well. So, you know, there's no days off in this game. You have to be ready when something happens. And it may happen at the most inopportune time, but it's always worth doing. You learn something. You meet a lot of great people out there that report the UFOs. They're just serious, honest citizens that want somebody to know what they saw and want somebody to tell them a little bit about what they saw, too, instead of being laughed at.
Has the nature of the craft changed? I mean, it seems to me lots of triangles are reported these days.
Well, you know, I'm all that over a lot when I look at what's coming in. But if you just kind of look at the spread of sightings that come along, the lights in the sky still number quite a few of them. So those are the ones that are the hardest to do anything with. You get past that and you get into the shape things, the disc, the sphere, the triangle, and then some other shapes continue about like they've always been. We hear a lot about the big triangle, but you know, we've been hearing about triangles since 1974, and even a few before that. Before we had stealth aircraft, before we had all this sort of thing. So just people who try to dismiss them as being a secret aircraft are kidding themselves. These things are something unusual. What I call them is unconventional flying objects, not unidentified. We know they're not balls of light and not airplanes and not other things. So they're unconventional, and they fly like we can't, but like we would like to.
And looking over this list here, I notice we have a legend there, Dr. R. Leo Sprinkle.
Yes, Leo is joining us this year, and I'm really tickled with that. I worked with Leo years back in APRO, and several times after that, he helped me in the Cash Landrum case. He is one super guy and has a tremendous history in the abduction side of this mystery, as well as knowledge about the mystery overall. He's not last spoke for MUFON in 1975, which you believe it's been that long ago. I just couldn't wait to get him to join us this time, and he graciously said he would be here, and he's got a brand new talk. And he talks about the pros and cons, you know. He talks about the cons as being competence people that try to con us into thinking nothing's going on. And the pros are the professional people that admit to the reality of what we've got going here.
You want to tell us a little bit about that case that you and Dr. Sprinkle worked on together.
Well, that was a case back in 1980 where two women and a small boy.
You wrote a book about that, didn't you?
I wrote a book about it called The Cash Landing UFO Incident. It still stands good today. People have tried to say along the way, well, that was secret government technology. Well, here we are 25 years later, and no secrets have ever been revealed or even hinted at that would copy this technology involved in that incident. So I say humbug on that.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting, John, in that people say, well, is there secret craft? And some may well be, if they've been secret for 30 years, you'd think we'd be using it by now.
Well, it'd be kind of stupid to try to fight a war without it,
wouldn't it? Yes, it would be. Paola Harris will be there, and one of my favorite people.
Yeah, it's nice. She comes to Colorado every
summer, right, I guess, up in...
While she's here, she usually joins us at our symposium. She had a workshop last year, and this year she's going to talk about her interviews with Charles Hall, not Haltz, but Hall, the Area 51 guy.
The Tall Whites.
The Rome... Vatican expert on this subject, and Paula does, she goes about connecting the dots, as she calls it. You pull all this stuff together, and you got a much bigger picture than the little picture of just one item, and she's doing it right.
Yeah, that's a lot of interesting people that you have there. I notice one of my favorite people, too, Richard Dolan.
Yeah, Rich is something, isn't he? Here's a young man that's gotten into this subject. He has a background in political science and Cold War techniques and all that sort of thing, and he brought that to bear on the UFO mystery. And man, he's a tiger.
Yeah, you're right about that. You have some people that are pretty good investigators in charge of each of these states. One of those people, I think she used to be in Washington, D.C., Lane Douglas. Yeah, she's in Utah now, huh?
See, our Washington representative,
yeah.
She did a lot on the disclosure work there in Washington. And she now lives in Utah and has been researching the invisible UFOs. You know, we've had so many sightings over the years where the UFO's flying along and suddenly blinks out. It's gone. And people have said, well, you know, that's impossible, so it's a misidentified. You just thought it, or it was just the sun was shining on it, and you couldn't see it anymore when the sun wasn't shining on it. You know, lame excuses. But then we started getting the radar reports where people would be picked up on radar, but the pilots would go up and couldn't see them. But they were still there on radar. So Lane has dug into that, and she's presenting a paper on that, even with a hypothesis on how they can become invisible.
Yeah, well, that'll be an interesting talk. You know, when you always talk about that, this thing down in Mexico comes to mind.
It sure does. The Mexican incident, to me, is still one of the better things. I know there's been a lot of attempts to debunk it as ball lightning and as pieces of meteor debris.
Yeah, have you ever seen ball lightning? I keep hearing about that.
No, I haven't. It doesn't fly at 10,000 feet for 10 or 15 minutes. And outstripping a plane and then stopping and starting. You know, it doesn't do that.
Anything new? I guess they actually turned some of the photographic evidence back to the Mexican Air Force to run some simulated tests and things.
Dr. Bruce McAfee worked on that analysis, and he worked with the original material that he got from the Mexican Air Force. And what he said was that at least one of the objects was a very real UFO. It was not ground lights, it wasn't flares, it wasn't meteor debris, it wasn't any of these other things. It was a solid object that was contacted on radar and the plane pursued at high speed, almost 300 miles an hour for over 10 minutes. That alone says something for it. But he went back then and suggested to the Mexican government some experiments they could run on other flights. They fly every day, you know, there's no reason they couldn't conduct some experiments. To this point in time, though, they haven't done it, and he's kind of disappointed because there was a good chance to really slam something home, a real slam dunk, if we've gotten some backup runs that were control-type runs to compare with the original.
What do you make of this down in Brazil? You think there's really going to be a lot of government cooperation?
Absolutely not. The people, Givard and others that went to that one meeting, looked at several files. They were not allowed to take any copies of it, any of it away. The president of Brazil now is getting a little bit shaky about his political position and not willing to take a tough stand on UFOs. And Bob Pratt, one of the best researchers I've ever known, actually had gone to Brazil many times and investigated several of the cases that this latest team was shown. Bob had more information than they got on it. And you can visit Bob's website and find that this man really knew what he was doing when he went to Brazil and investigated cases, medical entry cases. The cases where the military people actually went out and investigated this whole series of incidents. And all that material Bob's had for several years. And he knows it's real, and so do, of course, the folks down there in Brazil that are investigating. But expecting the government to give you much more, I think, is a wasted hope. I just don't think it's going to happen.
What do you think the story is on the cover-up? I mean, it's been 58 years since Roswell and Kenneth Arnold's sighting. And you think the government is, I mean, why? What do you think the real reason is the government doesn't be a little more forthcoming?
Governments are not too forthcoming with anything they can't control. You know, most of the material that's released is usually done for propaganda purposes, regardless of what the government is. I don't know, ours or anybody else's. You know, power and money are the things that control everything. And people like power positions. They like to control the effort. I think there are several answers to the question you asked. One answer is that many people today in various government positions think this has all been swept under the carpet because there's nothing to it. And so they don't have access and don't care to go get access to really true evidentiary information. That's the lower level tier of people in the various government organizations. The highly classified areas, they don't give you anything anyhow. You know, I've worked in that world, the black world, and I can tell you that material that goes in there doesn't come out. Nobody talks about it. It's never released in the Freedom of Information Act. It's never leaked. The classification at that level is very secure. And if you look at all the documents that came out of the Freedom of Information Act and that were posted on the CIA and the Air Force and other websites before 9/11, none of that material was the highly classified material. I think the highest generally was secret. And occasionally a top secret, but no special access information was ever released. And that's where this all resides. And people kid themselves if they think that they're going to ask and get something. It doesn't happen that way.
You know, you last night when we watched you on Larry King, Larry made the comment about, why don't they abduct Colin Powell or somebody well known, and somebody was going to give an answer and never got a chance. I guess it's...
I would like to have gotten a chance.
Yeah, I thought you were the one.
How do you know they haven't?
That's the first thing I thought of.
You see, many government officials that suddenly decide to have a change of heart and go a different direction, and nobody ever explains why. You know, it's a personal thing, and maybe they have been. I don't know. I frankly just don't know. But I do know that the illusion that only people who've been abducted are mentally ill or are dumb or are just little nobodies, that's baloney. These people are serious, reasonable citizens of this and other countries, not just the United States, but all over the world. These are good people. Many of them are business people that you deal with every day, and you don't know that this has happened to them because they have to live that two lives, you know, the one where they have to deal at night with their memories of these things, and in the daytime they have to act like nothing's happened to fit in with society. And, you know, that's almost criminal to make people have to go through that. It'd be much more civilized as humans to face up to it and to deal with it openly and say, hey, you are a good person, and we know you are. I tell you, I have never talked to a person, an experiencer, an abductee, whichever you wish to call it, that I felt wasn't being honest with me, and weren't good people, and I know a lot of them. And the people like Bud Hopkins and Deborah Lindemann and the late John Mack and David Jacobs and a number of others that have spent so much time working with abductees can attest to this. These people usually pass the psychological test better than the mainstream people on the street that says they're saner.
Yeah, I agree with you that I...
It's a tough world out there.
I've been doing this these kind of shows for about 40 years, and I've talked to many experiencers, many on the air, and I just don't think they all could be that creative, you know. So I think they're pretty sincere. I haven't read a...
Sincere. They're very lucid. They speak well. You know, these are people that you would, in any other case, welcome into your home or into your business, in your jobs. You know, but when it seems to put a little stigma on it because of the abductee thing, and we're working hard to move on to change that. I mean, this is ridiculous. We're in 2005 now. We're not at least working back in the days of the Salem witch trials. We need to face up to these things.
Unless we have Dr. Roger Lear there this year talking about alien implants as usual and physical evidence.
And Roger is going to address it more from a standpoint of evidence this year than he has in the past. In the past, he's been giving more of the methodology and that sort of thing. But, you know, this is rigid evidence. We don't know what it is, but they're taking stuff out of people that occurred in people after abduction experiences. And whatever it is worth looking at. And people say, well, we don't have any physical evidence. Baloney. Here's a piece of physical evidence. There are lots of physical evidence out there. And so Roger is bringing his new talk to Denver for us this year, and we're looking forward to that.
When you do these investigations, I imagine over the years, you've been doing it, as you said, with MUFON since 69. You probably, over the years, have learned exactly how to investigate these things. You probably have a little book or something that your investigators use. I mean...
We have a field investigator's manual.
Uh-huh.
And the purpose of that is to get people to think alike on this subject. You know, you can have police officers that are well-trained at doing police investigations, but if they don't know at least a little bit about the UFO mystery, it's kind of hard to make sure they cover all the points that you need to cover to tie down that kind of evidence. And so we ask people to study this manual and to take a test on it. It's not hard to do, but it takes a little bit of time because there's a lot of material in it.
I wasn't knocking your system at all. I was just kind of curious. You would think, you know, with that much experience, people would understand that naturally you would come up with good ways to investigate things. Anything new in the last few years on the UFO scene? I mean, we haven't. I'm a nuts and bolts guy. I'd love to go up and knock on the door and interview one of these people or entities or whatever they are. Anything really gotten your attention as a director?
I guess several things have gotten my attention. One is the rapid rate at which our human technology is progressing and how we can use that in investigations. Whereas, say, 25 years ago, somebody went in the field. They were lucky to have a Geiger counter and a ruler and some sample bags or something like that. Today, there are a lot of other things that are available. We can't get to them a lot of times, but many of these technologies that are now being used for surveillance since 9/11 are outstanding tools for UFO investigation.
Yeah, I imagine there's been lots of security cameras pick up things. In fact, we have reports of those all the time.
Ability to operate at low lux levels of light and pick up things so that way. That is unique. The radar has changed so much that is used in military and non-military operations. It is nothing like radar was 50 years ago. You know, it was good then, but it's better now. There's radar now that can actually detect shapes as well as blips, you know. And the infrared equipment, which... You know, a lot of people use now, but the infrared equipment is rapidly spreading, and there's all kinds of things you can see in the infrared band that you can't see with the visual naked eye. So there are, that's one of the things that's changing. And the other is changing the good and the bad, and that's the Internet. The Internet carries so much malarkey by people that don't know what they're talking about, that a lot of people subscribe to it. Those are all about. But on the other hand, it carries lots of good stuff, lots of good reports, lots of good analysis. And there are a few sites like you have, you know, that are really responsible and do good things. The secondary effect of that is the email. We get notification of reports as they're happening now, not through the mail a week or two later. That is so unique. Sometimes we can get people in the field before the event is done.
And that is, you're right, communications have changed completely.
Probably one of the hardest things, though, is the finances of it all. When there is so much free stuff on the Internet, people don't want to pay anything to get a magazine, for instance. And so it's very hard to have any money to operate on in an organization like MUFON. And it's only due to the dedication of our members that we survive that way.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point that you make there, John Schuessler, about the unintended consequences of things. And the unintended consequences of people, even like us, out there on the Internet, is that it does make it hard to get funding. I mean, you can't sell your magazines. I hadn't thought about that. And MUFON, I know, you don't sell tapes or anything, do you?
We don't sell many tapes. No, we sell a few. We're not really in it for big sales. We really want to have a membership that goes out and investigates it. A research group of consultants and research specialists that do things with the material, and that's really our main goal, is public education and building the database. And we recently implemented a new case management system database, which is going to be marvelous in the future. You know, we did have what we call the World UFO Database, but it was built on fairly old software and wasn't really up to date on what people are needing today. And so a couple of our members, Thomas Carlson and Jan Harzan, went off and came up with this new case management system we have just implemented. It's going to give people a lot of information about UFOs. It's going to give us the ability to do data mining and to see what the conglomerate of all this material is telling us.
Yeah, that's incredible, and that's good news. You know, you mentioned the international facts that MUFON's international as well. I noticed you have somebody from Turkey here this year at your meeting.
Yes, that's Esin Sekerkar. She is our Turkish representative, and she's going to be talking about the best UFO cases in Turkey. You know, Turkey is, when it comes to UFOs, is a fairly young country. They haven't had public UFO organizations too terribly long. They're residing in this border between the East, Asia and Europe, you know, East and West.
Yes, uh-huh.
Where we haven't had a lot of input in the past, except we've heard rumors of UFOs. Now, the cases are picked up and well documented now that she and others are working there in Turkey. So it's going to be interesting to hear about the pilot cases, for instance, which I'm a real fan of. But she's going to be bringing over.
Yeah, and evidently there's quite a few interesting cases there in Turkey involving airline pilots.
There definitely is, and in fact, she was instrumental in creating a UFO museum in Istanbul, which is pretty unique in itself.
Yeah, that's interesting. We have somebody on our staff, Feria Yadoza, who lives in Turkey part of the time and part of the time here in this country. And, there's lots of things coming out of Turkey all of a sudden. And that's, I guess it's been there all the time. Like you say, it's just kind of in that twilight zone between the East and West.
It's kind of been that way.
Mm-hmm.
Many other countries. You know, if you have a developing country or you have a warring country, the people don't have much time for UFOs. They spend their time surviving.
You're right.
When you get past that stage, then you start getting this other information. And you get scientific and environmental and other kinds of developments that come along. And I think Turkey's a good example.
Well, you know, the fall TV schedule has lots of UFO and paranormal-related shows, and, of course, we have War of the Worlds out now. We just had Star Wars. We have all kinds of movies. All of a sudden, it seems like the media suddenly has become very interested in this subject again.
Well, when they get started on it, they realize how much income it brings them. You know, again, everything is done on the basis of dollars. And UFO shows are very popular. People like them. They clamor for them. I'm going to be in another one on the History Channel on August 22nd called Alien Hunters. it shows what we do and how we do it.
Speaking of alien hunters, have you got a unique case of recent vintage that you could share with us, something you're working on now or off the top of your head that maybe it seems to me that there seems to be more sightings rather than less, and whether or not it's more activity or people just have better communication, I'm not sure.
Well, I tend to think it is better communication. I think the UFO activity, in my opinion, has been fairly steady and fairly strong for a long time. You know, we even had sightings during the downtime after 9/11 when no airplanes were flying. We had lots of sightings during that period. So, you know, it gave us a chance to really try out our observational technique.
Yeah, you got a good point there. It'd be hard to say that was aviation.
Yeah, you can't blame it on something else.
Uh-huh.
We had a case right here in Denver that we worked called the Stan Romanek case. Yeah, this man actually, during that week, saw an object pull up in his van, got his camera out of the back, and videotaped this thing going across the area roughly 500 feet above the ground. And when after it crossed over, it went straight up into the clouds, which we later found out were something like 11,000 feet, and it illuminated the clouds like something out of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Uh-huh.
And it was gone. Then right after that, he had the common sense to see people coming out of this park and started videotaping them, and found out that some 35 of them had also seen it, and two of them had videotaped it. So, you know, we had multiple witnesses, multiple cameras saw the same thing during this no-fly time. That's a good example of the sort of things that we get into.
You know the interesting thing I find when I do these UFO sightings reports all the time, and people on the air, is that there always seems to be a trend, and I think it's more in the reporting. In other words, one week it may be on the West Coast, another week the East Coast or whatever, but the thing that jumps out about me, to me, is when I started, I always thought, well, it always happened out in the middle of Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, in the desert, nobody around. That's not really the case. These urban areas have lots of sightings.
Yes, they do. And that's something that the negatives in this field say, well, if they were real, they would be seen somewhere besides out in Timbuktu. They don't realize they really are because they don't do their homework.
You know, we could talk for hours about all this, John. I know you're getting ready for the convention, so we're going to let you go here in a minute. But when in 69, did you think we'd be where we are here in 05? In other words, no disclosure, people still arguing about the same things, really?
No, in 69, when we organized MUFON, we thought that you could bring enough power to bear on it to actually bring it out into the open, and that governments would be sincere and share information, and all kind of naive thoughts. And I got to say, they were naive. I really thought there would be an answer to it by now. I thought our technologies would come forth and provide the answer, an unequivocal answer, and not one that says, well, maybe it's this or maybe it's that, or let's pretend like it's this. It hasn't happened, unfortunately, and in that way, we're not much further than we were in 1969. On the other hand, in 1969, we just waited with bated breath for a magazine article to come out, and when one did come out, and now we get it all the time with television and radio and all the other wonderful expertise that's out there that brings this stuff to us.
Well, you good way to close the show here, John Schuessler. Meeting starts for 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, of course, and it's going to be held, first of all, I guess I need to say when.
July 22nd through 24th.
And it's going to be there at the Marriott Denver Tech Center, and that's at 4900 South Syracuse in Denver.
Yes, it's actually right at Bellevue and I-25, which is a major thoroughfare through Denver, north-south. It's very easy to get to.
And I appreciate you taking your time. We look forward to working with MUFON closely, as we have in the past and even more in the future. And this thing with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, people need to, like you say, he is just an unbelievable man and a great asset to this country.
National treasure, and people people ought to take advantage of meeting him while he's still here.
And in addition to that, we didn't run over, we did not have enough time to run over everyone speaking. I wish we had, but we covered many of them.
You can always find him at www.mufon.com, and I know you have a link to us on your site, and we really appreciate that.
And appreciate you taking the time, John, and we'll be checking with you. You got another book?
Earlier book with a catalog of physical evidence cases, but it's out of print.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't had time to update it. I am working on another book on the triangles, but I'm not going to say much about that till I get it done.
Okay, well, have you got a time frame next year or what?
Well, it just depends on when the...
I understand. Well, we'll stick closely to you, and we look forward to having you on when that book comes out, if not before.
Well, I really thank you, and anytime I can be of assistance, just give me a call.
Okay, thank you very much, John.
Thank you.